Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Shmuel Bet, Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. Perek Aleph picks up right where we left off at the end of Shmuel Aleph. In fact, Chazal consider these to be one unified sefer. The division into two distinct parts is of Christian origin, and it is only with the advent of the printing press that it was adopted by the Jewish community. The first pasuk foreshadows the development that will take place over the next few prakim, the transition from the malchut of Shaul to the malchut of David. The first concern of the Navi following the death of Shaul and his sons is the whereabouts of David. Vayhi acharei mot Shaul, v'David shav mehakotet ha'amalek. Following the death of Shaul, David had returned from smiting the Amalek. Vayeshev David b'tziklag yamim shnayim, and David stayed in Tziklag for 2 days. We're told that immediately after the death of Shaul, David had returned to Tziklag after defeating Amalek. It is no accident that the image of David defeating Amalek is the opening image of the passage of royalty from the house of Shaul to the house of David. It is a not-so-subtle reminder that the Malchut was taken from Shaul because of his failure to comply with Hashem's command to eradicate Amalek, and we can hear the echoes of Hashem's promise that in consequence of that failure, the Malchut would be transferred to one who would obey Hashem's command. The topic of our perek is how David finds out about the death of Shaul and his reaction to the news. David now takes center stage. We wait breathlessly to see how the long-awaited ascent of David to the throne of Israel will be realized. Vayhi bayom hashlishi, on the third day, always an auspicious time in Tanakh. Other events that occurred on the third day and are introduced with that same phrase, vayhi bayom hashlishi, include Akedah Yitzchak, Ma'amad Har Sinai, Esther's approach to Ahasuerus, among others. This heightens our sense of anticipation, the feeling that a long-awaited event is about to transpire. On the third day of David's return, a refugee arrives in Ziklag from the camp of Shaul, with torn clothing and dirt on his head as one in mourning. And as he approached David, he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. David asked, "Where have you come from?" And he replied, "I escaped from the camp of Israel." David asks urgently, "Mehaya hadavar? What has happened? Hagednali, tell me." And the messenger responds, carefully choosing his words so that the news is delivered min hakal el hakaved, from least to worst, which brings to mind the messenger who arrived from the battlefield to inform Eli of the defeat of Yisrael in Perek Dalet of Shmuel Aleph. In Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, we read, Vayomer, Asher nas ha'am min ha'milchama, v'gam harbe nafal min ha'am v'yamutu, v'gam Shaul v'Yehonatan b'nometu. The nation has fled from the battle. Moreover, many fell in battle, among them Shaul and Yehonatan his son. David, in apparent disbelief, for Shaul and Yehonatan were courageous and skilled warriors, asks, "How do you know for certain that Shaul and Yehonatan have indeed died?" And the young man who had come to tell the story tells a tale that will sound somewhat surprising to us, as it does not exactly match the narrative as it was related to us by the Navi at the end of the previous chapter. This is his version. Nikro nikreti behar hagilboa. Note the use of the language, "I happened by chance upon Har Gilboa." Clearly, one doesn't just happen upon a battlefield. Although the youth has not yet identified himself, it will come as no surprise to us after hearing this phrase that he is a descendant of Amalek, characterized as Asher Korcha Baderech, who similarly happened upon us in a surprise attack in the desert, and who traditionally attribute everything to chance rather than divine providence. Having arrived on the scene, the youth continues to relate that he encountered Shaul, Nish'an al-Chanito, leaning upon his spear, and the chariots and riders of the Plishtim were bearing down upon him. Shaul turned and noticed the youth and called to him. The youth answered, "Hineni," implying, "Here I am, prepared to do your bidding." Shaul asked, "Who are you?" And he responded, "I am an Amaleki." Shaul then requested of him, "Amotna alai umoteteni, ki achazani hashavatz, ki cholod nafshibi. Stand beside me and slay me, for the shavatz has grasped hold of me, and I have just the last breath of life in me." The word shavatz is unique in Tanakh, and several possible translations are offered by the commentators. The most literal translation would be that this is a term for a tremor experienced just prior to death. Thus, Sha'ul would be saying, as Rashi explains, I know I have been fatally wounded, but better that you should finish the deed at my behest than allow the Plishtim to take credit for my death. The Midrash relates the term Shavatz to the word Tashbetz, as a reference to the Kohanim of the city of Nov, who wore the priestly garments known as Ktonet Tashbetz, and thus Sha'ul would be saying, I know I am held accountable in heaven for the sin of killing the Kohanim of Nov. Ralbag offers a somewhat novel explanation that attempts to reconcile this account with the narrative of the previous chapter, in which Sha'ul had requested of his arms-bearer that he kill him, and upon his refusal, Sha'ul fell upon his own sword, making no mention of a passing youth. Says Ralbag, Sha'ul fell upon his sword, but it got caught in the mesh, tashbetz, of his armor, and didn't penetrate enough to kill him. Therefore, upon noticing the youth, he asked the Amaleki to finish the job before the Plishtim caught up with him. In verse 9, Pasuk Tet, the Amaleki youth complies with Shaul's request and killed him, excusing himself by saying, Ki yadati ki lo yichyeh acharei niflo. I knew that he would die anyway, implying that there was no reason for him not to do as Shaul had asked. And then comes the punchline, which may give us additional insight as to his motive in bringing the news to David. Va'ekach ha-nezer asher al rosho, ve'etzada asher al zro'o, va'aviyem el adoni heina. I took the crown from upon his head and the cuff from his arm and brought them here to you, my master, implying that David is now the rightful owner of the crown. It seems obvious that the youth was seeking the approval of David, perhaps even a reward, for his expression of fealty to David as king in place of Shaul. So how can we reconcile this account with the narrative of the previous perek? We saw one suggestion, just a moment ago, which would place this account between verses 4 and 5 of Perek Lamed Aleph of Shmuel Aleph. Shaul requested of his arms-bearer that he kill him, but he refused, out of fear or reverence for the king, at which point Shaul fell on his own sword. If we interweave the story in our perek, Shaul's attempted suicide was unsuccessful, perhaps as Ralbag suggested, because the sword caught the mesh of his armor. Radak, sensitive to the shift in language from the sword in Perek Lamed Aleph to the spear mentioned here, interpolates that after falling unsuccessfully upon his sword, Shaul then leaned on his spear for support when the Amaleki chanced upon him and killed him. In this version, the irony of Shaul being finished off by a descendant of Amalek would certainly not have been lost upon him. Another suggestion is that the event transpired exactly as told to us by the Navi in Perek Lamed Aleph, and the youth was simply telling his own story after having come upon the body of Shaul in an effort to curry favor with David, whom he recognized as the rightful heir to the throne of Israel. Certainly, he might have expected that David, who had been pursued relentlessly by Shaul these past months, would have rejoiced upon hearing of his death. His reaction remains to be seen. But before we get there, just a word about the ornaments that the youth brought with him to David. Mahari Kara, a contemporary of Rashi, questions why the king would have been wearing his royal ornaments to war. He cites the Midrashic teaching that the crown and bracelet are not to be taken literally, rather as symbolic of the tefillin that the king wore on his head and his arm in prayer that his military effort would be successful. This presents a very poignant image, the Amaleki presenting David with the most personal artifact, attesting to Shaul's binding attachment to the master of the universe, even as he led the people into battle, emphasizing that the outcome ought to be attributed to divine providence rather than human effort, a direct contradiction between the worldview of Amalek and Yisrael. Nevertheless, Mahari Kara goes on to say that while the Midrash may be beautiful and inspiring, it is certainly possible to explain more literally that it was the custom of kings to go out to war decorated in royal ornaments as a sign of their confidence in their projected victory. The removal of these ornaments by the Amaleki may in fact have helped delay the identification of Shaul's body, which was not discovered until the following day. David's reaction to the news of Shaul's death is counterintuitive. While we might have expected that even if he didn't rejoice at the news of the downfall of his pursuer, after all, he is David, but he would at least have felt some sense of relief that he could now move freely without having to fear for his life every time he turned a corner. To our surprise, David's immediate reaction is unequivocally one of pain and sorrow. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vayachazek David bivgadav vayikraim, vigam kol ha'anashim asher ito. David tore his clothing, setting the tone for the reaction of the entire assembly, who did likewise. Vayispidu, vayivku, vayatsumu ad ha'arev al Shaul ve'al Yonatan bino, ve'al am Hashem ve'al Beit Yisrael ki naflu becharev. They mourned and cried and fasted until the evening over Shaul and Yonatan his son, and over the nation of Hashem and the house of Israel, for they had fallen by the sword. Note that primacy is given in the outpouring of distress and mourning to Shaul and Yonatan, and then to the remainder of the nation, Am Hashem and Beit Yisrael. Having given vent to his initial feelings of intense pain upon hearing the news, David regains his composure and once again turns to the young Amaleki, asking, Eimi ze'ata? And the youth explains, I am the descendant of an Amaleki convert to Judaism. Clearly, David was asking for more than geographic information, since he had already explained that he was coming from the battlefield. What David is trying to understand is how an Amaleki youth came to be on the Israelite battlefield. David then exclaims, Eich lo yareta lishloach yadcha l'shachet et Mashiach Hashem? How is it possible that you were not afraid to lift a hand to destroy God's anointed one? This phrase echoes David's response when he found himself in a similar situation, back in Perek Chavav, chapter 26 of Shmuel Aleph, when he was being pursued by Shaul, and he raided the camp of Shaul at night, finding Shaul and his guard all fast asleep. And David's nephew and military aide, Avishai, wanted to seize the opportunity to kill Shaul with one blow. And David exclaimed rhetorically, presaging what is about to happen in our perek, Ki mi shalach yado b'mashiach Hashem v'nika? Who may lift his hand against Hashem's anointed one and be found innocent? If Hashem wants him to die, he will find a way. Perhaps he will die in battle. But chalila li me Hashem mishloach yadi b'mashiach Hashem. Heaven forbid that I should lift a hand against one anointed by Hashem. To do so would be sacrilege, which explains David's behavior in the next psukim of our chapter, verses 15 and 16. Pasuk tetvav, Vayikra David la'achal mehanearim, Vayomer gash pegabo, Vayakehu vayamot. David called one of the attendants and said, Come close and strike him. And he struck him and he died. Vayomer ilav David, Damcha al roshecha, Kificha anavcha lemor anochi motati et Mashiach Hashem. And David said to the Amaleki, Your blood is on your head, for your own mouth testified against you, saying, I killed the anointed one of Hashem. The word damcha in Pasuk Tetzayin is pronounced in the singular, but written with a yud, as if it were plural. David is effectively saying to the youth, You are held accountable both for your own death and that of Shaul, for no one may slay one who was anointed by Hashem and be found innocent. The remainder of the perek is the moving elegy of David over Shaul and Yehonatan, in which he laments the loss of these great heroes of Israel. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vayikonin David et hakina hazot al Shaul ve'al Yehonatan bino. And Shaul mourned this elegy over And David mourned this elegy over Shaul ve'al Yehonatan mino and Yehonatan his son. Vayomer, Lilameid b'nei Yehuda kashet, hine k'tuva al sefer hayashar. Now that their protectors are gone, we must teach the sons of Yehuda the art of warfare. Is it not written in the Sefer HaYashar? Rashi explains that the Sefer HaYashar alludes to Sefer Bereishit, in which Yaakov blessed his son Yehuda with the promise of victory over his enemies. Hatzvi Yisrael al bamotecha chalal, eich naflu giborim. How could Shaul and Yonatan, Tzvi Yisrael, the swift and skilled warriors, the glory of Israel, have fallen on its hills? David protests poetically the joy that would certainly be felt among the Plishtim when the news of the deaths of Shaul and Yehonatan would spread. Al tagidu begat, al tivasru b'chutzot Ashkelon, pen tismachna bnot Plishtim, pen ta'alozna bnot ha'arelim. Let the news not be spread in Gat in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised Plishtim rejoice and be jubilant. Tragically foreshadowing the images of rejoicing in the streets of Gaza following attacks on Jews today, with which we are all too familiar. David curses the very hills on which the battle took place, Let not dew nor rain fall upon these hills, nor the fields produce bounty, which would be an insult to the glory of Shaul and Jehonatan, who met their downfall in that inauspicious place. David describes the bravery and skill of Shaul and Jehonatan. Midam chalalim mechelav giborim keshet Jehonatan lo nasog achor, v'cherev Shaul lo tashuv rekam. Neither Jehonatan's arrows nor Shaul's sword missed their mark. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23, Shaul v'Jehonatan, hane'ehavim v'hane'imim b'chayehem uv'motam lo nifradu, minisharim kalu me'arayot gaveru. Shaul and Jehonatan, beloved and pleasant in their lives, in death were not parted, though they were swifter than eagles, stronger than lions. Words so powerful that they have become part of our liturgy, the Av HaRachamim prayer said on Shabbat morning, in which we mourn the losses of communities decimated during the medieval crusades. Lest we think that the mourning over these able warriors be left only to the men, David now calls upon the women as well to recognize their loss, to reflect that their fine garments and jewelry came as a result of the military prowess of Shaul and Jehonatan. The effects of their leadership were felt well beyond the fields of battle. David now offers a personal lament over the death of his closest friend, Jehonatan ben Shaul. The friendship between David and Jehonatan is cited in Pirkei Avot as the prime example of true friendship, not dependent on any material benefit that one might receive from the other, but a true binding of one heart to another. Such a friendship was more precious to David even than the love of women, which, at least in his experience until now, always came with strings attached. For the third time in the lament, David concludes with the refrain, Eich naflu giborim, how are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war lost to us. The kina is an expression of both intense grief and great love. Set against the backdrop of admirable courage and military achievement, the love of the people for Shaul and Jehonatan, their love for one another, and more personally, David's love for Jehonatan. While mention of David's nascent kingship is overtly absent, its imminence hovers in the background, and the era of David's kingship is heralded by his deep sensitivity, his ability to overlook personal grievances in favor of national unity, and his respect for the institution of the kingship as an expression of Hashem's kingdom on earth. Thank you for studying together, Li'iloi Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.